Ego doesn't write songs. Follow your gut. And when you're co-writing, don't be scared to throw stuff out, even if you think it's stupid, because just chuck it out there, throw it out there. I'd rather write with a writer that's throwing out silly lines and saying nothing at all. I love songwriting. I mean, songwriting's a great thing about songwriting. You can do it all, you can do it for the rest of your life, you know. You can keep writing, and I feel that the older I get, the better I'm getting at it. And I guess the beauty of what I do and the beauty of the songs that I write, I mean, I can sing them when I'm 80 years old. It doesn't matter. They're not. I don't have to be up on stage jumping around to sell them. You know, they can be, they're very lyric based, and that's what I love, is to write lyrics.
Welcome to Songwriter Trysts, an intimate podcast that is connecting songwriters from all over the world. I'm singer-songwriter Ray Lee. Music saved my life, and I want to talk to other songwriters about the power of songwriting, talk about their journey and how they got to where they are today. This is a safe space to share stories, lessons and emotions, all the great things that build an amazing song. To support the podcast and follow our journey, you can find us on songwritertrysts.com. All right, welcome to A Songwriter Tryst with Matt Scully, and lovely to meet you. Thanks for coming.
Oh, thank you for having me on your show.
Tell us a little bit about who you are and where you come from.
My name's Matt Scullion, and I've been in the music business ever since I can remember. Mm-hmm. And I've been very fortunate in the music business and traveled the world and Australia many times. And I got serious about songwriting probably the first time I went to Nashville, which was back in 1999.
Wow.
And went there on many, many, many trips, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, just to learn my chops, so to speak, and learn a little bit more about the craft that I love so much. I guess the doors really started opening for me probably about 15 years ago when Lee Kernaghan approached me about writing with him. He loved what I was doing. So we ended up writing about 20 songs together over the years. Great. I'm happy to say I think six of them went to number one.
Amazing.
That was great. And then that got me in with Garth Porter, which was fantastic. So I've done a lot of work on different projects with Garth over the years. And from then it just spiraled, really, you know. Doors opened and I got to write with a lot of people and I guess become the go-to writer.
That's great.
And then I decided to go back to Nashville and try and live every writer's dream of having the getting paid for what you do with a great publishing deal.
Mm.
I had a lot of friends, and I've still got a lot of friends that do it over there, and they're doing really well. It didn't work out for me that way. I didn't end up getting that publishing deal, but I learned a lot in the process, and I learned a lot, and I learned that it probably wasn't really what's happening in country music wasn't really the thing for me. It's not really why I went there.
Yeah.
I went there... I'm more of a storyteller and a lyricist, and I just didn't find. I guess I just didn't fit. I didn't fit with the changeover of the guard, with what was happening in country music. So I decided to come back to Australia and just do it myself.
Yeah,
and just write for myself and write about what I thought was important, and do it the way that I wanted to do it, and then release my own album. So, and that's not taking anything away from the country music industry. I think it's fantastic what people are doing.
Mm.
It's just not really for me. It's just not really my thing.
That's all right. I think you're a great example, though, of success breeding success and being able to work with people and build on that and, you know, take the lessons you go. I think that's not an uncommon story when I've talked to people about having opportunities or maybe missing out on opportunities and that crossroads where it's like, do I go down and publish a record label or do I stay independent and stay true to what I want to do, or do I do what they want me to do? You know, that seems to be quite a common point in people's careers. How do you feel about that? Do you wish you had have kept pushing for those opportunities, or are you glad that you stood true to who you are and what you wanted to do as an artist?
Very glad that I stood true to what I wanted to do. It's really... Since I came back from overseas about 6 years ago now, I've been very fortunate. I've married my sweetheart, and we bought a place, and we live in a beautiful part of Australia. And I'm very writing nice. Music, and we're based up near Glen Innes in a place called Glencoe.
Yeah, beautiful.
It's up in the northern tablelands, up where it snows. It's very cold country, but it's beautiful country.
Mm.
And we live in a yurt, a roundhouse.
I can see that behind you.
Yeah. That's a beautiful place. And, so I just want to elaborate a bit more on what I said before.
Sure.
Some people might take it the wrong way. I think there's some great stuff in Australian country music now, you know. But for me, I just didn't feel that when I was over there, I just didn't feel that I could write about the subjects they were writing about and do it as well as they were doing it.
Mm.
You know, it's got such a pop sensibility about it now, you know, and it's not the reason that I fell in love with country music. I fell in love with country music because of the stories.
Yeah.
And because of the honesty and the sincerity and the originality of the themes.
Yeah.
You know, it's just every now and then you'll hear a song and you'll go, whoa, now that's what I'm talking about. Now there it is. There's that magic. Yeah. But it's very few far in between. And I'm not blaming the artists for that. It's definitely the industry that's made it that way, you know. And when you're in Nashville and you're trying to be that writer, you're governed by the industry if you want to make something out of it. And if you want a publishing deal, it's so funny. They'll sign you for a song that you'll send them that'll blow their mind. Yeah. And they'll go, my God, okay, now don't write anything like that.
It
happens like that all the time. You know, they'll sign you because of an amazing concept and lyric you've come up with that is so different to anything that's happening.
Yeah.
But then they'll go, okay, that's great, but now I want you to write like this.
Right, like the ones that are number one at the moment.
Yeah, and I mean, you can try and do that, but if it's not your thing, then, you know, you're competing in a world where it's not really you, and then you've got to scratch your head and go, you know, I got told many years ago by actually someone that you've had on your show. I'm not going to name drop, but someone that you've had on your show. And
that's 200 people.
Well, a recent one, actually.
Okay.
He said, the only thing worse than wanting a publishing deal is being in a publishing deal that you're not happy with.
Right.
You know, and he was right, because I've been in a couple of those and a couple of record deals like that too. So, yeah, it's good to be back here and doing what I want to do and trying to make my own path and my own road. It's a hard way to go because I wouldn't say my songs really fit commercial radio, but that's okay. I'm happy with that, you know. I'm totally happy with just forging out my own path.
I'm curious, because you've said a few times, you know, what brought you into country music and the storytelling. Where did that begin? What was your inspirations? How old were you? Why were you, like, so passionate about songwriting from such an early age? Where did that spark?
Two things. An old green Commodore and an old cassette deck.
Okay.
That's where it started from. My stepfather had an old green Commodore when I was a teenager. And I'd heard a bit of country music, but I didn't know a lot about it. Mm. And back then you could get these like Reader's Digest tapes, and it was the best 100 million selling country hits or something like that. I don't know what it was. And anyway, had an old green Commodore with a cassette deck in it. Anyway, we had this tape in it and got stuck in there, and we couldn't get the tape out. So for the next 12 months, every time you jumped in the car, if you didn't listen to the radio, you listened to this cassette. And on this cassette was stuff like The Gambler by Kenny Rogers, Behind Closed Doors by Charlie Rich, Cunnamulla Fulla by Slim Dusty. Let me think what else was on there. Kiss an Angel Good Morning. I think there might have been a Dolly Parton song, Jolene or something. All these great, cool stories, like really, really, really cool stories. And I just fell in love with them. And then I started searching a bit more for, I don't know, I just fell in love with lyrics. But it took me a long time to really, I guess, to understand what a good lyric was. A long, long time. You know, I look back at my old songs and I would never ever sing them because the lyrics are shit house. They're terrible.
Well, you do get better. That's something that maybe you don't realize until it happens. Because I've definitely had different people on the podcast where they go, you know, my lyrics come from God or the sky or whatever, and I don't, you know, they don't rewrite, they don't do anything, and they don't do any education on trying to get better. It's just, this is what comes through me, and that is, and that's one way of doing it. But I definitely relate to, since especially even just doing this podcast and talking to people, you know, like I said, greatness inspires greatness, and I've been learning so much, and I've noticed a difference in my songwriting changing because I'm writing with different people and I'm learning so much. And then I'm also learning to rewrite, which is a fantastic thing. Do you rewrite much?
It's all in the rewrite.
Yeah.
Anybody that says, look, it comes from God and I never rewrite it and blah, 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 blah. I don't know about that. I'm good on them, but I don't know if you can get a song just bang and you never rewrite it again. I mean, I don't know how good that song's going to be. I've got a really good book that I can recommend for anybody that wants to read. I'm looking at it now. It's called Songwriters on Songwriting for anybody out there. And the author is a guy called Paul Zollo, Z-O-L-L-O. Now, this book, he used to be a journalist. And he used to write for a New York magazine, like a songwriting magazine, and he's interviewed everybody who's anybody. And they all talk about the process of songwriting and the way they write songs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an amazing book. And I usually only read books once and then I don't read them, but I read this all the time.
Yeah.
And it's you can look at people like Leonard Cohen's in there, you know, and Leonard talks about how, you know, he rewrote what was his masterpiece? Hallelujah. 80 times.
Yeah. 80 times. Did he ever finish it? Like, not official. Like, there's how many verses are there for that one?
I don't know. But it drove him crazy in the end. Yeah. It drove him crazy. And I was but then you look at Neil Young and he says that he just writes and bang and that's it, leaves him alone. If someone can do that, good on him. Mm. Good on him. But I'm yet to meet a songwriter that writes, I mean, a great, great song. Where they didn't like look at that great song that Miranda Lambert sings, The House That Built Me.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Amazing, amazing song. They got Song of the Year and won all the awards. 10 years it took to write that.
Yeah, right.
Over and over and over and over till they got it exact. And it depends how far you want to dig with your lyrics. It depends what kind of a writer you want to be, you know, because there's music out there that's rhythm and beat based, you know, rhythm and melody based, and some people like that.
Mm.
But if you want to write a song that's just got no holes in it, and the lyrics are just friggin' amazing, you've got to keep going back to it. I reckon. That's the way I do it anyway. I just don't think you write that great song on one attempt.
Yeah, yeah, fair enough. So what is your? I agree with you. What is your? You said you like to storytell, but is there a specific thing that you find is the Matt Scullion, like, line of truth amongst your songwriting and what it is that you're always looking for when you're telling a story?
Australia.
Aussie as.
Aussie. the things that, but not in a bogan way, in an original way that really sums up what you're talking about, the subject matter, you know. I love writing about Australia and there's so many different things to write about. There's so much out there. There's so many funny things we do that make us Australian. What makes us Australian? What tastes Australian? What looks Australian? What smells Australian? What is Australian? What was Australian? What is Australian now? What will it be tomorrow? All these different things that make, and to me, that's my, I guess that's my calling. It took me a long time to find my calling. A long time.
How did you work it out? When did you realise that's what it was?
When I met my wife.
Barely?
Obviously. Yeah. She's if you listen to my song Aussie As, she's Aussie As Shaz.
Okay.
Call her Barry Baz and Sharon Shaz. It's Aussie As. Well, that's Shaz.
Oh, her name's Sharon.
Anyway, Sharon. Yeah, I was living in Nashville and I met her on one of my return trips because I'd come back every year and play some gigs and play the Tamworth Country Music Festival and visit my mum for Chrissy and stuff like that, you know. And
mm-hmm.
I met her at the gig I was doing up in Newcastle and where she lived and we clicked and kept a long-distance relationship going over Skype for a long time, you know. But around about the time I was feeling like I don't know. I love Nashville because it's music 24/7.
Mm.
It's always music and you don't have to look for it.
Mm.
I love that about it, but I just didn't feel like I was I didn't feel like I could make a difference. You know?
Mm.
I felt I could write really good songs, but I didn't feel like there was a place for those songs to be heard apart from me singing them in songwriter bars. I didn't feel like they were songs that were going to get cut by people, and that's what I was writing to do, was to get songs cut, you know. So I was feeling like I needed to come home, and then meeting Sharon, and I'd been long distance dating her for 2 years, and she pretty much turned around and said, well, look, if you don't come home soon, that's it.
Oh, well, so that's a long time to wait for someone. Well done.
But we did rendezvous in Hawaii.
Oh,
one time.
Do you have a song about that? And
I did. I wrote a song over there, and I called the song Hawaii.
Nice.
Very, very original.
I love it.
I wrote it with Sharon, actually. Yeah. I wrote it with Sharon. That was on her bucket list to write a song, and there was a ukulele with a palm tree on it in one of the Airbnb places we stayed in. I'd never played ukulele before, but there was a ukulele chord book sitting there on the coffee table. And mm-hmm. Ooh, picked it up. How hard can it be? And we wrote a song called Hawaii. But anyway,
I love
back
that.
Getting back to the question. So yeah, I felt that what I was doing was really good, but I didn't feel like it was. I was either behind what was going on, or I was ahead of it. I don't know. Or maybe I was redundant. I don't know. But I knew what I was writing was really good.
Yeah.
But I knew it just didn't. It just wouldn't. It wasn't cutting it in today's market. So I thought it's time to come home. And I had written back in 2018 was another – this was around about the time too, or 2000 – yeah. I'd written a song with Travis Collins and Amber Lawrence
mm-hmm.
called Our Backyard, which ended up winning 3 Golden Guitars. And I won the Golden Guitar for the Song of the Year as a songwriter.
Yeah.
And it was staring me right in the face all the time what I should be doing. I should be writing about what I know. And I know Australia better than anyone because I grew up here. You know, I know it. Well, I don't know it better than anyone. You know it just as well because you're from here too. You know, your husband knows it just as well. But I know it.
He's British. He doesn't know anything.
Okay. Fair enough. You'll have to teach him.
He's the one that I have to get the spiders out of the house because it scares him.
Oh, all right. Fair enough. What was I saying? So, yeah, there was a few things that led me to where I am now, and I've always loved Australia, more so since being away and seeing it, missing it really bad and then coming back. And the first song I wrote when I got back was Aussie As.
Mm, wow.
But that took me 2 years to write.
Right.
I wrote that with a fella called Paul Grierson from Simply Bushed.
Yeah.
And originally he was doing an album and he was going to do an album and I was going to produce him. We talked about it and that never eventuated, but that was the song we started. And then in the end, it wasn't quite finished and I wanted to do an album. I said, I want to record that song. If they're not going to record it, I'm going to record it. So I finished it and, yeah, I recorded it and that sort of got me on the path to what I should be doing.
Yeah, awesome. I'm glad that you stuck with it and you didn't just give up on it. I think there's a lot of songs can end up on the cutting room floor. Which is sad.
If they're good enough, I write a lot of, I start a lot of songs that just don't get finished. I guess they've really got to matter.
Mm.
And you got to think about, I think to myself, you know, when I'm playing to my audience, are these songs going to, are they going to care?
Mm.
Is it going to relate and are they going to care or is it just another one of those songs that I've heard this 100 times before? It's got to have something special about it, you know.
Mm.
That's the way that I look at it. And
you've talked a lot about co-writing. When did that start for you? Are you a big co-writer or do you do 50-50 on your own or what's your process around that?
I was a big co-writer for a long, long time and I had to get confidence writing with myself again. And I started out writing on my own and then when I moved to I was in Darwin for a long time. A full-time musician up there and then I came down to Tamworth in 2000 and I think it was about 2001, 2002 and I started co-writing a lot down there
mm-hmm.
and that sort of got me on the path. I mean, I was doing a little bit because I'd been to Nashville before that but I hadn't had a lot of experience in co-writing but I started doing it around the early 2000s and for a long time that's all I did.
Yeah.
I wrote with everybody And then when I started writing for myself again for these last two albums, I was always asking my wife, you know, is this good? Am I delusional here? Is this actually good? Because usually when you're co-writing, you've got someone you can bounce off and go, hey, is this a stupid line or is it actually really, really original and good?
Yeah.
You know, or is it really corny? Is it too out there?
Too
good. So now I've learned to trust myself again. So
that's good. So you just kind of needed that confidence again. So what was the journey to getting back out there and doing your own albums again and, you know, finding your own feet? What was that drive?
Just wanted to. And I also, another thing I learned while living overseas is that it's not like it used to be being a songwriter, you know, that making a living out of it is a lot harder than it used to be because there's just not the money around that there used to be, like, because most people stream these days. And I just heard that the streaming companies have put it up a couple of percent. So I think we're getting, we might be getting 1.5 cents now for 10 plays, who knows. So anyway, another thing I came to the realisation was that, you know, and it was from watching a lot of friends too, you know. Mm. I was happy being a songwriter, just doing the 9-to-5. I was really happy with it. I liked the lifestyle. I loved it. And I just couldn't see a way of making a living out of it.
Yeah, right.
Unless you're getting on the big, big albums, the real big albums, the albums that are selling.
Well, like, you know, I mean,
exactly. You know, I've had, I think, 8 songs on 1 Lee Kernaghan album, you know, and that still didn't pay much because it's not that people don't buy albums like they used to. They stream. He's got millions and millions of streams, don't get me wrong, but it's not paying. It's not just all about the money. No, but I mean,
but you need to be able to make a living. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's not like it takes time to do this. It's not really, I mean, I think a lot of people would say, oh, it's just a hobby, but you can't write good songs like that and get good quality unless you're putting in the time and the work.
Exactly. Exactly. It's hard to have a full-time job and write songs, you know, because you're right. You've got to have a lot of time to stare into space.
Well, so many people in the country industry that I know of, like a lot of artists, they are working another job. They've got something else.
Mm. It's honest. And there's a couple of ways you can go about it.
Mm.
You can do covers, right? Now, doing covers, you could do a couple of cover gigs a week and bring, as a soloist, to bring home $1,000 a week or whatever, you know, which is great. That's enough money to live on. It's very soul-destroying, but and trying to have your music heard, your songs heard, in a place where people are there just, well, where you're a jukebox, basically. But that's okay because that's what you're paid to be. When you're a cover act, you've got to realise this, that that's what you're paid to be.
Yeah.
If you want to do your own music, the best way you can do your own music is to hire a venue and get people in. And then they're there to sell tickets. But unfortunately, until you get a big name, you're not going to get many people there. So having a little casual or part-time job is not such a bad idea.
Mm.
But it depends. It depends if you can handle being a cover artist, and then because then you've got a lot of time to write songs. So there's all different ways to do it, and there's no rights and no wrongs. There's no rights and no wrongs. It's however you find your own way. And I remember going to see years ago. I was probably 20 or 21 or something, and I remember going to this big music conference thing or whatever it was, and I can't remember the artist, but he was the in artist of the day. It was in Sydney.
Yeah.
And I remember talking to one of the record execs or whatever, and I'm telling him, oh, blah, 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 this and blah, blah, that. And he goes, mate, I don't want to hear excuses. I haven't got time for excuses. Just do it. Just do it. And I walked away feeling really with my tail between my legs and really angry. And I thought, how dare you say that? Blah, blah, blah. And then I thought about it and I thought, no, you know what? He's right. It's a bloody hard industry, and and you're better off if someone's honest with you, because there's a lot of people that piss in your pocket, and you want someone who's honest and tells you the truth. And you just got to get broad shoulders and you've got to take it. You know, if you really want to compete in this business, you know, you've got to find your own sound. You've got to find your own path. There's already a bloody Taylor Swift and a Shania Twain and a Lee Kernaghan and a Luke Combs.
Yeah.
There's already those guys. You don't want to be writing songs like them because you might get on radio, but you're not going to last.
Yeah.
You know, I read, you know, as soon as you start writing for trends, by the time you release that song, the trends changed.
Yeah.
So why not just be honest with yourself and don't listen to the radio. Don't listen to it.
Mm.
Screw the radio. Screw YouTube. Screw all those places. Don't listen to them. Lock yourself in your room and write your own music and just be and trust yourself and trust your gut and just be honest. Yeah, be honest with yourself and give it a shot because you never know.
That's good advice. Yeah. Speaking of secondary incomes, you're doing coaching now. I see.
Yes.
Is that kind of the goal, is to kind of be able to pass on some of this wisdom that you've learned along with obviously another income stream?
Never done it before, to tell you the truth. I've been invited to go and talk at seminars and stuff like that about writing.
Yeah.
But I've never done it before. And someone said to me a while ago, you know, you should, have you ever thought about doing songwriting lessons? And no, I don't want to do that. No, blah, blah, blah. And then I thought about it and I thought, well, yeah, why not? I mean, if people want to pick my brain and want to write a song with me, you know, and I can't promise them that I can teach them how to write a song, but I can, I can definitely give them a different way to look at it, and it might make them think. Sometimes that's all you need is just to, maybe you're learning or you're frustrated and you're in a hole. Maybe you just need to look at it a little differently, you know, and just sort of see the song from a different perspective, I think really helps sometimes.
I don't know about you, but often after I've written a song, I'll put it in a drawer for a couple of weeks just so that when I do go back to it, I've got fresh ears. But it's funny because especially even the production process, I hate that process. I'm usually never happy with the song and then I'll just release it and then, you know, later on I won't listen to it for a while and then I go back to it. I'm like, oh, yeah, it's pretty good. Like, you know, what's your kind of process around getting fresh ears on your own music?
Yeah, okay. I'm one of these people that play my music live before I release it. There's danger with doing that. Danger is not the right word.
Sing all my songs before I record them. Like, you got to test it on the crowd first, right?
Yeah, but you can get your songs. In today's technology, everybody's always filming stuff that you do, you know, and then you can have your song out there online before you release it, and you don't want it there yet.
Yeah,
but you've got to. And sometimes people can steal your ideas, you know. So you've got to be careful. But at the same time, I think by singing your songs live, you really get to see people's body language and whether what you're doing is right, you know. So I do it all the time, and also obviously playing it for friends and family. And my wife's a great editor, you know. And if my mum gets excited, I know I'm onto something, you know.
I have the biggest fights with my husband when I try to write with him. We've written one song together and it was a murder ballad.
Oh, cool. There you go. All right.
Okay. So, yeah, no, we've decided that that's not a safe place for us to go to.
Yeah, fair enough. But, yeah, look, it is a hard one. You got to just trust yourself sometimes, you know, and you don't always get it right. You know, I'm writing for a new album now, which I'm going in the studio with Shane Nicholson in February.
Awesome.
To record my next album. He does all my albums.
Great.
But I don't even run them past him.
Yeah.
I don't because I'm not going there. I'm going there for Shane's I mean, he's an amazing songwriter, but I know what I want to say. You know, I know how I want my songs set out.
That's good.
I just want his instrumental.
His touch.
His touch on it, you know. And so I usually know by the time I go into the studio, I've got my songs pretty well the way I want them, and I know that they're what I want to release.
Mm.
He might come in and change a phrase here and there, you know, and I'll go, wow, that's awesome. I never thought about singing it like that. That's all. Now I'll stick with what I got, you know.
It takes confidence to be able to do that.
Yeah, it does. But you know, again, it's working out who are you? Who do you want to be, you know? Mm. I mean, and this isn't a songwriter thing. This is an artist thing.
It's a different thing.
And that's why for a long time I was quite happy being a songwriter because it was so much easier I didn't have to worry about all that artist crap that you got to go through. You know, this image, there's all this social media crap you got to be all over all the time, which takes your time and it takes away from the important things like sitting there with a cup of coffee staring into space. They're the important things, you know.
No, I get it. I just want to sit still and be able to write a song.
That's what I mean. That's it. And, you know, you write a song and you write it with a really good artist and you think, great, now you can go and deal with it.
Yep.
Let me know if you send it to me when you've recorded it.
Yeah.
You know, and then hopefully you'll release it as a single and a video and I'll get some royalties from it, you know. It'd be nice. So being the artist is definitely wearing another cap, you know. And when you're the songwriter and the artist, you know, it's a big, big job. It's a big job, but it's very satisfying when it does come off.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm. And sometimes surprising. Sometimes the successes come from the places you least expect it.
Yeah, that's right. Mm. That's right. Put it out there and believe in it and don't follow trends. And you know, there's a lot of things that I want to teach. I don't want to give too much away in what I'm going to teach people about writing. And again, it depends on the writer that comes to me. If it's someone that wants to write songs, then we won't talk about the artist thing. You talk about the pitching side of things and how to get songs to artists and maybe how to get a publisher interested and all that and how to demo your songs up and write the song. And, of course, you've got to write it first.
Yeah.
It's got to be good. And if that person's an artist and a writer, well, then I guess we can go into the stuff that I've learned over the years, having good record deals and crappy record deals and
there's so much
releasing
to learn,
there is so much to learn. And if I can, you know, if anybody's interested, absolutely jump on my site and send me an email and look, I might not be the right person for everybody, you know, but who knows, you might get something out of it.
We'll definitely put all the links into the description of the podcast. One of the things that I like to ask everyone just at the end of the podcast is if you could co-write with anyone in the world, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
Paul Kelly, because he's the best.
Okay.
He's amazing. He just blows me away. I would pay to write with that man. He's exceptional.
He's your man.
And he inspires me. But Don Walker is another guy. He's just amazing. Yeah, they're probably two of the ones that come straight to mind. I've had the great fortune of writing with a lot of my heroes. I got to write with Richard Clapton while I was in Nashville. I wrote with Ian Moss from Cold Chisel. And I was over there and a friend of mine, Sam Hawksley, hooked it up for me. Sam lives over in Nashville. He's a good mate of mine.
Mm.
And we wrote this really cool song and I took the idea into Mossy, this really cool riff, and he ended up recording it exactly the way I wrote it, which was cool. So and then and I'm thinking I might get a song on an Ian Moss solo record. This is good. And anyway, I'm in a songwriting appointment one day. This is about 6 months later.
Yeah.
And I get this text message, and it's from Ian Moss.
Yeah.
And he goes, Matt, just want to let you know that Chisel are releasing another album, and I usually always sing two songs on every album. The boys love Shoot the Moon. That was the name of the song.
Yeah.
So congratulations, mate. You got a Cold Chisel cut.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
This was in 2015.
Wow.
So I put the phone down and my two American co-writing people of the morning, what's up, Matt? What's up? And I said, I just got a cut with Cold Chisel. They went, Cold who?
Oh, really?
I'm like, you're joking. I said, well, okay.
No.
Imagine if Journey got back together. Steve Perry and Journey, imagine if they got back together and they were like, that big? I went, that big?
Yeah,
that
wow.
big. They are the biggest of all Australian bands of all time. They are the, within Australia, they are the band, you know. Yeah. That will be remembered. And so anyway, I went out that night and I was really, really happy. I went out writing a good song that day and then I thought, I'm going to go out and have a few celebratory drinks. And
Fair enough.
I went down to Midtown. Midtown in Nashville where I usually go, where the songwriters hang out.
Yeah.
I was sitting there and I couldn't find one Australian anywhere to celebrate with.
No one knew
Nicole Chisel. No one knew Nicole Chisel. So I had to celebrate on my own.
Sounds like we need to open up a bar in Broadway in Nashville called the Aussie As or something.
The Aussie Bar.
So that we can all know where to go. Like that.
call it Oi 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 or something like that. I don't know. Yeah.
Just call it Aussie. Everyone else would know what that means. And if they want to feel Australian for a night, they can just come to that bar.
Yeah.
It's all Australian country music.
There used to be an Aussie bar there. And
really?
But it was before my time. And, it had closed down by the time I moved there. But there used to be an Aussie bar where all the Australians used to congregate and drink Fosters and eat.
I was going to say they'd sell Fosters.
And eat mate pies, yeah.
Oh. Yeah, and that's what you want. And, I mean, if it was now, you'd also want to have a decent coffee.
I guess it being a songwriting podcast, I love songwriting. I mean, songwriting's great thing about songwriting. You can do it for the rest of your life, you know. You can keep writing, and I feel that the older I get, the better I'm getting at it. And I guess the beauty of what I do and the beauty of the songs that I write, I mean, I can sing them when I'm 80 years old. It doesn't matter. They're not... I don't have to be up on stage jumping around to sell them. You know, they're very lyric based, and that's what I love, is to write lyrics. Actually, the melodies are things I struggle with sometimes.
I'm the opposite.
All right.
It's the melody that comes to me first.
Yeah, no, I feel that lyrics, I mean, I'm good with lyrics and melody, but I just find with melodies, especially when I'm writing my own stuff, I've got to be careful. I don't plagiarise myself, you know, because I actually write lyrics a lot easier than I do melody. I find it harder to find a new original melody, something that, because it's obviously a marriage of the emotion of the lyrics that's got to fit with the melody. So it's finding that. My wife will often say, "Yeah, that's really good, but that sounds like something else you've written." And I'm like, "Damn, bugger." Yeah. Okay, back to the drawing board and then trying to find a melody. I do end up finding that melody, but I have to really, really dig, and really sometimes it takes me a long time to really find something that will match, because my initial instinct wasn't right. Mm. And that's hard, because you write those words to that melody, you know, and you've got to find, sometimes you've got to change the cadence of the words and the rhyming structure and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, no, you sound like... the type of person that I always love that. Like you said, with melody, you got to dig deeper. I have to dig a lot deeper, and it can take me a long time to find the right words especially those verses to get that message across. I'll usually have the idea and what I want to say, but how to say it, it just isn't as natural.
That's okay. Like I always say, don't be in a hurry. You know, if you really want to stand out, your songs have got to be fantastic. They've got to be great, you know, and if you really want to stand out, and you can always tell when you listen to new songs and new artists on the radio, you can tell the ones that have put their time into their song, and you go, "Wow, geez, that's cool. Oh, yeah, that's really good how you went there. I love that," you know, and they're the songs that stand out, you know, but they're the ones you got to dig for, you know. Put your gloves on and dig. That's what it's all about.
And collaborate, you know? Yeah, don't be afraid to try something just because you want to do it, and it's not necessarily the trend. I like that advice that you've given right throughout this podcast, is, you know, don't follow your gut, essentially, and do what you
love. Follow your gut. And when you're co-writing, don't be scared to throw stuff out, even if you think it's stupid, because just chuck it out there, throw it out there. I'd rather write with a writer that's throwing out silly lines and saying nothing at all. Throw them out there, because you might think it's a silly line, but part of the line that you've said, the other person might go, "I never thought about it like that." I don't think you're saying it the right way, but I love where you're going. And then all of a sudden the song takes a different twist. Mm. But if you hadn't have said that, the song wouldn't have taken that twist. So that's another thing. Don't be scared to find that co-writer that you feel comfortable with, that you can throw those ideas out, you know. Yeah.
You got to get comfortable really quickly and throw the ego out the door. Is that right?
Absolutely, yeah. No, song... ego doesn't write songs.
No. Ego doesn't really belong in the music industry or the arts industry at all, because that would imply competition, which I don't subscribe to. I know a lot of people do, but it's not part of my artistic journey.
No, that's it. Mm. That's the one.
All right. Is there anything else you would like to share? We have space and time now.
Oh,
anything we've missed?
Not really. I mean, as I said, I'm not really the kind of bragger, but I will give you a nice little interesting story to finish the podcast.
Please do.
So a fair few years ago, I'd written a song with Lee Kernaghan and a good friend of mine, Laurie Minson, who lives in Tamworth, written a song called Scars, and it was the very first song I ever wrote with Lee. And it was for his Planet Country album, which was a huge album for him. And so Lee invited me into the studio to play guitar on the album with the great Glenn Hanna, who's no longer with us. So that was amazing sitting beside Glenn all the time while playing guitar with him. And anyway, long story short, the song's a duet and it's got a very close harmony, like, say, a Big and Rich song where they sing really close to each other when they're singing. So I did I can't remember if I did the low or the high part. I think I might have done the high part and in the studio. And then Lee said to me after it, he goes, Matt, I really like the way you've done that. How would you feel about, we're going to release it as a single, how would you feel about being the other singer on the song? I mean, I'd be an absolute honour, Lee. Thank you very much. I'd love to do that. Anyway, I was getting ready to go back overseas, fly over to Nashville, and I was at the airport and I get a call from Lee. Mm. And he goes, hey, Matt, how are you going? He goes, I know you're going overseas. I just wanted to catch you before you jumped on the plane. He said, I got some good and some bad news for you. I said, well, you better give me the bad news first. He said, unfortunately, mate, you won't be singing on Scars anymore. I went, oh, I was looking forward to that. He goes, but Dierks Bentley will. So he'd
it's not a bad person to be added by.
He was a mate with Dierks and he played Dierks at actually that's what had happened. Lee was recording, he was using some extra musicians from Nashville. He recorded it in Australia, but he was using some extra musicians. And I think Brett Beavers was the producer, and that's who that in Nashville, and that's who Dierks uses. And Dierks happened to be in the studio when they were doing their live cross, and Lee was up in Australia watching and conducting it and saying, no, I think the fiddle needs to go like that, or the steel guitar needs to sort of go like that. And they were putting down doing some recording to Scars. And Dierks said, hey, Lee, and he sort of said, mate, what a great song. Awesome song, blah, blah, blah. And Lee said, well, Lee being the opportunist, you know, which is fair enough, so am I.
Got to be, yep.
Got talking to him later and Dierks showed his interest and Lee said, well, would you like to sing on the song? And sort of that's how it came about. And that song ended up going to number one, which was fantastic. And I got to be at CMC Rocks the Hunter before it went up to Queensland. And when Dierks was out and I was backstage when Dierks was there and Lee and Dierks sang it on stage and they gave me a big shout-out. So that was a big buzz.
Well, that's nice. They kicked your vocals off the song but they gave you that's a shout-out and that's amazing.
I still got the songwriting credit, so it was lovely.
Well, that's pretty big deal. So I'm really glad you had that moment and that is what a career is built on, isn't it? There's more and more moments like that.
It's all about moments, you know, moments. Yeah. And I've had plenty of those wonderful songwriting moments. I've been very blessed, but I've worked very hard too.
Absolutely. It's not something that comes easy and I definitely know that it doesn't come easy. And anyone who is listening who wants to be a songwriter and thinks it's going to be easy, go get a real job or something that's 9 to 5 because it's something that it has to be a compulsion. It's a compulsion, isn't it?
Because you got to love it. You got to love it because there's not a lot of money in it there's not a lot of money in it, but then there is a lot of money in it, you know, and it's something that you do because you love. Mm. And the way you've got to look at it is I'll do this because I love it. And if I can make a living out of it, well, then that's the cream. That's the cream on the top.
Absolutely. Amazing. Yeah. Well, you've been a pleasure to talk to and I feel honoured that I've been able to speak to you and learn so much from you and get to share this with everyone on the podcast. So thank you so much for giving me your time. And
no worries.
Anyone else who wants to spend some time with you and get some, you know, personal feedback, they can check out your coaching that you're going to be doing as well. It's all on the website, yeah?
It's all on my website, yeah. It's very easy to find and they can just contact me and, actually reminds me, I better update my website and get it all looking good so when they do jump on there.
It's very generous of you.
Stuff like that.
Well, that's my husband does that stuff. Yeah. He's If you look at Tris's website, he's done an incredible job with that website, and I cannot take any credit for it. I'm just the pretty face and the person who talks too much.
Well, you're doing a great job, right?
At talking too much, thank you very much.
Being the host of the show.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much for sharing, and it's very inspirational, and I'll let you know when it's ready to come out.
Awesome. Okay, cheers.
Thanks for joining our songwriter Tris today. To join the family and keep up to date with future podcasts, you can follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter. Please leave a review and subscribe. To support the podcast or contact me or our guest, please go to the website songwritertrists.com. Lost in the crowd, no one can hear me. Wish I could.